Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Well, 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 bringing you all the up-to-date information on the sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council, Gay Men's Health Centre, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, this is Well 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 on Joy 94.9, brought to you every week by the Victorian AIDS Council, where we talk about sexual health and well-being as part of the queer community. I'm joined this evening by John, the Senior Policy Analyst Extraordinaire at the Victorian AIDS Council. First off, of course, we need to say thanks to Daniel and the team for outtakes. G'day, John, how are you going?
I am tired, but I'm good and happy to be here.
Oh, that's super, doll. Now, John, this week, and dear listener, this week, we'll be talking about a documentary about to hit the silver screens across Australia. Then later on, we're going to talk about a fun fundraiser happening next Monday night. And after that, we're going to have a chat about art therapy.
Yes, the documentary you mentioned is the film The Queen of Ireland, and soon we will hear a conversation we had earlier this evening with Rory O'Neill, more known as Panty Bliss, and then we'll be chatting with David Butler from Whose Eyeliner Is It Any Gay? Later on, our colleague from Back Services, Deirdre and Tim, will be discussing art therapy, as you said, a very fun-packed show.
That's right, and as always, we love for you, the listener, to join in the conversation. You could send us an SMS here in the studio, 0427-JOY-949, and also you could send us an email, which also comes to us here in the studio, onair@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well 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 here on Joy 94.9. And, of course, the show each week is brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council. Now, earlier this afternoon, about 5 o'clock, we had a chat with a guy in Ireland. It was Rory O'Neill, also known as Panty Bliss, and the stars are of the new movie The Queen of Ireland, which starts this Thursday in cinemas across Australia. There have been lots of pre-releases of it, and I was very fortunate to see one as part of the Victorian AIDS Council last Thursday. So right now, we are going to hear part one of an interview with Rory O'Neill from Ireland. Listener joining us on the phone from Ireland, we welcome the celebrated Rory O'Neill to Well 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 here on Joy 94.9. Rory, thank you for being available to speak with us. I'm Tex, my co-host is John. How are you today?
I'm good, and thank you for getting me up at the crack of dawn.
Yes. Now, Rory, we've invited you to join us to chat about the film The Queen of Ireland. It's going to be released here in Melbourne this coming Thursday. But to start with, yeah, could you share with us a little bit about yourself and where you're originally from in Ireland?
I am originally from a very small village in the very west of Ireland on the Atlantic coast called Ballinrobe in County Mayo.
Now, Rory, when did you realise, or when did you know, perhaps, that you weren't like the other boys in your village?
Well, I think in common with probably a lot of LGBTI people, when I was pretty young, I realised that there was something different about me, but I wouldn't have been able to name it for a long time. And, of course, sometimes now when I talk to young gay people, I think they think that that is so nuts because, of course, nowadays kids are so much more aware of these things and as soon as they sort of have an inkling there might be something wrong, you know, different about them, and then they're on the internet and, you know, a few clicks and they're watching Brazilian boys making out with each other or whatever. But when I was growing up in the 70s, I had no frame of reference for gay. You know, there wasn't anything gay in my world. So I had absolutely no frame of reference for that. So it took me a long time to work out exactly what was different about me. So I was probably 10 or something when I started to, you know, realize that there was something a little different about me. But I was probably 16 or 17 before I worked out what that difference was.
And Rory, when you worked that out, what were the attitudes toward homosexuality like?
Well, it's funny because in some ways, I would say that almost there was no attitude because it was so far out of our world that for a long time, I wasn't even sure if gay people really existed. I wasn't exactly sure if they were real or whether they were just, you know, invented to be the object of jokes on sitcoms and that sort of thing. So in that sense, there was no attitude. But then, of course, as I got a little older and I sort of became more aware, then I realized, of course, that most people in the 1970s in Ireland, gay people were these odd, weird, you know, queers, as they were always called. And so the idea that I might be one of those queers was really frightening, you know. Yeah. Like what I always tell, you know, young people now is when they are a bit, think that's odd, I say to them, I very clearly remember the very first time that Boy George appeared on Top of the Pops. And the next day in school, you know, the whole debate and discussion about that, wow, you know, that person, was whether or not Boy George was a man or a woman. Because the idea that he might just be a flaming homosexual, you know, never entered anybody's mind. You know, we had no we had no reference for drag queens.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So the whole thing was just, you know, totally alien to sort of, you know, the West of Ireland in the 1970s. And then the very first time that I actually understood what I was and everything, I read, and my father had a book, and the book was called The Naked Ape, and it was very popular at the time. And my dad had that book, and one time I opened it up, and in it there was a chapter on human sexuality, and within that chapter there was a chapter on homosexuality. And it described what gay people were, and it described what gay people did. To me, it was the most exciting and terrifying thing I'd ever read, ever, because he simply described, you know, what gay people did. You know, he described homosexual acts, whatever. But it was exciting, A, because it was revealing this thing that, to me, that I recognized as being me, but also because he was a doctor, you know, a scientist, so he was writing with no judgment.
Yeah,
he was simply describing what gay people were. And that was the first time I ever saw any reference to gay people where there was no judgment. And to me, that was so exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kept that book under my bed and for years, and I would sort of go in under the bed every few months and get it out and read it, you know, and touch myself inappropriately. Super excited.
So given that you had this sexual awakening of sorts when you read that, did you come out shortly after that while you were in Ireland, or was it after you moved to England? When did that happen?
No, I came out quite a while after that. When I went to art college in Dublin when I was 17, and I guess when I was sort of 18, you know, about a year after I'd been there, I came out to my siblings. I came out to my sister, one of my sisters first, and then to the rest of my brothers and sisters. There are six children in my family, very Irish. And and so they were the first people that, and my friends in college. And my friends in college reacted very well because they were art students, and, you know, even if they had a problem with the gays, they would have died rather than admit it. You know, they were cool art students. And my siblings, you know, they loved me, and, you know, they're all smart. And so they were okay with this. And sort of brilliantly, one of my brothers said, well, I'm gay too.
No way.
And so for a few years then, my siblings all knew, but it was a few years after before I told my parents. Because at the time, sort of the attitude of some of my siblings was, oh, there's no need to tell mommy and daddy. You know, they'll only be upset, and they're already getting elderly. And, you know, that was the attitude. So my siblings knew for a few years, but I did not tell my parents until I was 21 or 22 or something, after I'd come back from living in Tokyo for a while.
Rory, last Thursday I was lucky enough to go and see your film, The Queen of Ireland, which is a brilliant movie, and I do recommend it to our listener and suggest that when it's released this Thursday that they hotfoot it to the theatre and go and see it. Now, in that movie, you disclosed that you are HIV positive. I'm really interested to know...
Yeah.
What was the reaction, I guess, after one coming out for your family then, your family of choice, your friends and, you know, mates and stuff?
Well, I was diagnosed in 1995, so it was a pretty grim time to be diagnosed with HIV. To be blunt, it was a death sentence. And my friends' reaction, well, they were resigned because, of course, my friends, you know, knew many people who had... died of it, you know, age-related complications. You know, we'd been to many funerals. My family was different. I didn't tell my family for about a year. partly because I wanted to get my own head around it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to sort of go and tell them, and then they would have all these questions, and I wouldn't be able to answer them. So I waited about a year until so I knew the answers to all those questions, and I told my parents then. And I always say that it was more difficult to come out as HIV positive than it was to come out as gay. Mm. I felt in some way that, it was my fault, that I was HIV positive. Mm. And so telling your parents at the time, basically you were telling them you were going to die. It's a horrible thing to tell any parent, as their child. And then to be telling them about HIV, which at the time, there was a lot of blame around it. So it was a horrible thing. And I always say I would rather have come out to them as gay 10 times over than have to tell them I was HIV positive. But again, my parents were incredible. They just sort of got on with dealing with it.
So given all this background, being gay, being HIV positive, growing up in Ireland, England, Tokyo, when did Panty Bliss come around? Like, how did she develop?
I had been an art student in Dublin after I left school, and I was studying graphic design. But about 3 years into my graphic design degree, I sort of realized that actually I don't want to be a graphic designer, But I had one more year to go, and I thought, well, I'll finish the course. But the summer before my final year, I went to London to work, and I was staying with my older brother, and I was having the time of my life. I was running around London nightclubs in the 80s, and I met an Australian guy.
Oh, yes.
Lee Bowery, do you know who that is?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so my brother was very friendly with Lee Bowery, and so the very first night that I went to London for the summer and stayed with my brother, he had a party in his apartment, and Lee Bowery was there in the kitchen, and Lee was this incredible and very huge, large, physically imposing guy. And he had these incredible costumes, and he was this amazing performer. And so it was really hanging around with Lee that got me interested in nightclubs and club performance and performance art and all of that.
You are famous for the Abbey Theatre monologue and your campaign for marriage equality. How did that all come about?
Well, so a few years ago, I appeared on a chat show here on Irish television. I was already well-known-ish here around here.
Indeed, yeah.
And during the chat, a discussion about the nature of homophobia arose and said on the TV that there was, and I named some sort of famous Irish journalists and one particular organization, and I said that I thought they were homophobic, that they write terrible things about gay people, and I thought nothing of it, but then those people were very upset with me. And they sued me for defamation, but more importantly, they also sued our national broadcaster. So it became a huge scandal, and so while that was happening, I made a speech at our national theater, the Abbey Theater, about homophobia and the situation that I was in. And to my surprise and everybody else's, that 10-minute speech about homophobia, went viral and sort of became this huge thing, and it sparked this giant discussion, national discussion in Ireland about homophobia and how we treat gay people, which then led on sometime later into our referendum on same-sex marriage.
Which was very successful. And do you have any advice for us here in Australia as we head into a possible plebiscite, a possible vote?
I would say if you can avoid the plebiscite, do. For two reasons. One, it's a very risky strategy. If you have a national plebiscite and you don't get the answer you want, it would then be very difficult, for any politicians to try and bring in marriage equality for a long time. And also because plebiscites are divisive and depressing and horrible. And in Ireland, our experience was that the 6 months of the referendum campaign was depressing and nasty, and it gave a platform to homophobes and anybody who has any problem with gay people to say the most awful things about gay people. In fact, they're encouraged to say the most awful things about people. And it's a very unpleasant experience, especially for the LGBTI community. And I think it's particularly harmful for young LGBTI people. So I would say, if you don't need to have one, don't have one. And in your case, you don't need to have one.
No, we don't at all.
We were forced to have one because we needed to change our constitution. So it seems crazy to me that you have politicians that you have elected to do a job, so let them do their job and bring in legislation.
Rory, it's been absolutely sensational to speak to you. Your film is brilliant. I'll be recommending to everyone I know and, of course, to our listener to go
Thank
and see the
much.
Movie. And if people want to find out about the Abbey Theatre, just go to YouTube and type in Abbey Theatre Ireland Panty Bliss. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. You're with Tex and John tonight. And that gorgeous song, which I just absolutely love, is the one and only Freda Payne singing Band of Gold. And, of course, we just listened to the interview with Rory O'Neill, also known as Panty Bliss. This is, of course, Well, Well, Well. And joining John and I in the studio right now are David Butler, along with Christy and Susanna from the David Butler Studio. Welcome to the three of you here on Well, Well, Well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, you've joined us this evening to chat about an intriguingly titled VAC fundraiser. And the name is, Whose Eyeliner Is It Any Gay? And I've said it with emphasis.
Of course.
But before we explore that topic, can you share with us, David, perhaps a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yeah, for sure. I was originally from Tasmania. I had a small teaching studio there. That's where I was born and raised. And I came across to Melbourne in 2009, I believe it was, to study classical voice at the Victorian College of the Arts. I opened my studio officially in 2012. I had been teaching again. It just took a little bit longer to get the studio up and running here, and went full-time with that in 2013.
Okay, and Christy and Susanna, now you're both in the show?
Susanna is not in the show.
Right. But Christy, you are?
Yeah, I'm
in the show. Super. And just a little bit about you both, about yourselves.
Sure, I was born in Canberra.
It's not your fault. It's fine.
David. I was born in Canberra. I studied dance for a really long time. I went to Sydney. I moved to Singapore to become a musical theatre performer.
Good heavens. Yep.
Did a lot of performing overseas, and then I came back to Australia where I met David here in Melbourne. He's been my vocal coach ever since, and yeah, I'll be performing in the fundraiser next week with a team of other actors and performers.
Oh, we're going to hear about them as well. That's great. And Susanna?
My role is DBS Assistant Events Coordinator, the Studio Events Coordinator. This is a new role for me, kind of moonlighting in this role, and it's kind of my creative outlet, supporting David, and I'm also learning singing with David.
Okay. Now, David, I do have a question to you about singing. Now, you have masterclasses, just mentioned, for people who want to sing. Mm. Just out of interest, can anyone learn to sing, or does there need to be an underlining ability or perhaps a hidden or undiscovered talent?
To my mind, anybody can learn to sing, absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you can speak, you can absolutely sing. Whether or not it's in tune is a completely different matter.
Right.
That'd be me. That's obviously a bonus. Mm-hmm. But look, at the heart of it, it's about the enjoyment of it. It's something for the soul. So long as there's enjoyment, then there's somewhere to go with it.
Mm. Now, as well as the fundraiser coming up next Monday, have you done any other events anything coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. Through my studio, I have a number of clients who work with companies such as Opera Australia, some of the more major musicals that come around, like King Kong, Strictly Ballroom, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, those sort of things. I also produce semi-regularly concerts and recitals in Victoria and Tasmania. I'm a firm believer of going back to where one comes from.
Yep.
I saw the sideways comment with the Canberra call. I apologise. I also, through the studio, host various international guests. This year we were fortunate enough to have Chuck Hudson, who's an operatic director based in New York.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. So out of all the many charities that you could possibly be fundraising for, why did you pick the Victorian AIDS Council? Why VAC?
Susanna will comment. One of David's first and closest friends in Melbourne contracted HIV a number of years ago, and I think he became aware of just how much work VAC does at that time. Mm-hmm. And Christy?
I lived with a friend who was positive, and I guess what really stayed with me about that time that I lived with him was just how much his life was structured around his health. And I just think that we're really fortunate here to have a network of support like VAC for people, and it's a privilege to be able to lend what you can to that network, and in my case that's my performing skills.
Yep, thank you.
That's cool. I mean, as somebody who works there, but as somebody who is positive as well, it's really cool to hear that there are people out there supporting us. Mm. So, but about the show itself, I think the title might give us a clue as to what the structure
really
and content
subtle
might be.
Reference, isn't it?
Clearly not camp at all. But could you tell us what the show is going to be like? Like, what will it involve?
Yeah, for sure. The title is obviously a reference to the UK and US television program Whose Line Is It Anyway? Where comedians, public figures, celebrities, performers have an opportunity to play outside of their usual art form and a stricter format, and just basically for fun and for the entertainment of it, which I think is really important nowadays. We need to have that sense of fun and yeah, getting away from such heavy, serious topics sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's completely understandable. So what are some of the fun things that we get to do during this show? Do we get... Are we ready to hear some singing, or there is going to be acting?
Yeah, for sure. There is a series of random sketches, a lot of audience participation, a lot of audience suggestion. They sort of have a lot of control over the direction that the show will go. Yeah, the performers have no idea what's coming, which is fantastic.
Oh,
for me
cool.
as a producer
fantastic.
Going, you guys, make it up as you go along.
All the audience.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, we are here with David, Christy, and Susanna from the David Butler Studios. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we're chatting with David Butler, Christy, and Susanna from the David Butler Studio about the VAC fundraiser next Monday night, which is titled Whose Eyeliner Is It Any Gay? Now, David, you were saying about the audience having some participation in the show and the people involved in the show not actually knowing what's going to happen. So how does a director direct who doesn't know what's going to happen?
Well, that's really the best part of my role in this. It's sort of set them up and see what on earth happens. We're very fortunate with who we have. But, yeah, the audience plays a crucial role in this. They really govern sort of the direction of the sketches and how the games go.
Mm-hmm. And there's singing as well.
There will be singing, yes. Our MC is a fabulous talent, so he'll be sharing with us a few ripper numbers.
Okay, now, there was a great paragraph which promoted the show. Perhaps you could read it out for us.
Certainly. Grab your false eyelashes, smoke up those eyes, and watch some of Australia's finest performers from the worlds of musical theatre, cabaret, drag, and television tackle a series of spontaneous sketches. Working with only a few random ideas from the audience and our fabulous MC, prepare yourself for quirky skits, outrageous scenes, and sumptuous songs as we bring you a night of high-energy entertainment with a big dollop of glamour.
Fantastic. Wow. Now, you mentioned this MC. I hear he has quite an interesting name.
One could say he has an interesting name. Yes, Cougar Morrison. I was introduced to Cougar last year by the aforementioned, if I could speak, Chuck Hudson, who's my director contact in New York. He suggested that we meet as he felt that we would have a bit of a connection as far as maybe working together in the future. And he was certainly spot on with that. Cougar is... and an incredible talent. I saw his show last year in the Fringe, and immediately I went and bought another ticket. I had to see it again. He's just captivating. He's like an androgynous mix of David Bowie and Marlene Dietrich,
yes.
With a voice just like Edith Piaf.
What?
Oh. Mixed with a little bit of Beyonce.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Oh, this
good heavens.
Phenomenal. Yeah. So with that level, who else is on the cast?
Yeah, for sure. We're so fortunate to have the cast we do, and they're from all walks of the performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Amberly Cull, who people will recognise from the Impromptunes, and most recently Avenue Q when it was here in Melbourne.
Cool.
We've also got Dean O'Curry, who everyone in our community will recognise for his cabaret and hosting work around Melbourne too.
Oh, yes.
We also have Christy Griffin, who is with us tonight, who's worked extensively as a musical theatre performer and choreographer here in Australia and in Singapore.
Oh, hey, girl.
We've got a fellow Tasmanian in Tim Page, who, if he's not winning Deal or No Deal or some game show on television, he's been seen shaking his spear at the Globe Theatre in the UK or on the musical theatre stage here in Melbourne.
I've also got the gorgeous Lulu McClatchy, who was recently in Avenue Q here in Melbourne, and she's just completed another tour of a show, Super Girly, which she was lucky enough to perform for Elton John and Madonna, as well as some other people in the UK.
And lastly, we have Adam Porter, who's a fabulous performer currently in First Date at Chapel Off Chapel and played Linus in the recent Australian production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Quite a stellar cast then. Mm. Now, there's a guest judge, pretty there amazing. Is. Can you share that name?
We absolutely can. We are ecstatic to have Geraldine Quinn on board with us, who's the queen of cabaret.
Fantastic.
We love her.
Now, I also believe there's going to be a judge representing VAC.
Yes, indeed.
And that person's name will be unveiled on the night.
On the night, correct.
Yep. And there'll be VAC volunteers going to be there shaking buckets for any loose change that people have left over once they've been to the bar.
Yes, absolutely. Precisely right.
David, Christy and Susanna, it's been fantastic hearing from you. I know that this event has already been publicised to VAC members and volunteers and to the staff. I know it's on our Facebook page and I know it's going back onto the Facebook page again tomorrow because I was talking to the Facebook page person.
Perfect.
It sounds like it's going to be a great night. I'm looking forward to it. So that's next Monday. Now it's at?
It's at Howlabar in Brunswick.
Ah, Brunswick, of course. So Howlabar in Brunswick, what time?
7 p.m. are the doors.
And if people want tickets, they can go to Moshtix, but they better get a move on because I do understand the tickets are selling really well.
They are.
Moshtix, go to your favourite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, and type in Mosh, M-O-S-H, Tix, T-I-X, and you'll be able to find out more about the tickets. Thanks to the three of you for coming in tonight. It's been sensational.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks very much.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9, and that, of course, was Tonight Again by Guy Sebastian. It was the 2015 Eurovision song from Australia when Australia came fifth. It's the very first time properly in Eurovision. Joining John and I in the studio tonight is Deirdre, one of our colleagues from the HIV Services Program at the Victorian AIDS Council. She works out of our Positive Living Centre, together with Tim. They're both practitioners in art therapy. Now, good evening, Deirdre and Tim. Welcome to Well, Well, Well here at Joy 94.9.
Hi, Tech.
G'day.
Cool. Thanks for joining us. So, first off, Deirdre, could you share with us and the listener just about yourself? When did you start at VAC and how did you come to be involved at VAC?
Okay. Well, I'm originally 17 years in mental health and I have some good friends who were talking about a position going at the PLC. So I applied for the job 7 years ago.
Okay,
and
cool.
I love it. It's fantastic. Yeah.
So what sort of work do you do with the client?
I'm a care and support worker. Okay. In drop-in.
Okay.
And I also go out on the road and I work in community support. So I support people that live in their homes that are quite unwell. So I work between the two programs and it's great.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And Tim, how long have you been involved in this work in art therapy?
Yeah, look, I've been studying art therapy for the last few years, but I've only been a volunteer with the PLC for the last few months. So, yeah, I've previously worked in a few jobs, but I've been at uni for a few years, and I work for myself at Artery Creative Arts Therapy.
Okay. Now, Deirdre, is this work that you've been especially trained for, or is it something you've fallen into as well as your other work at the Victorian AIDS Council?
I studied art therapy for 3 years, probably about 5 years ago. I left a full-time job in mental health as a mental health manager, but I wasn't working with people. So I decided just to quit and study art therapy, which was the best thing I could have ever done.
Cool.
Because it's brought me into a whole different life, especially at the VAC. I love doing it.
Okay, now, both of you, both Tim and Deirdre, to the uninitiated, me, What is art therapy? Now, are we talking about splashing around some paint, throwing some items together, calling it sculpture, or is there a bit more to it? I'm suggesting or thinking there's probably a bit more to it. Your turn to fire away.
Yeah, it's all that.
Yeah.
You do all those things, but it's to assist people to enhance the quality of life. And for people that find it really difficult to go into a therapy where they have to talk, about their feelings, that can be very difficult for people. So art therapy is a different way of using creative processes to assist them with, you know, getting feelings from the subconscious down on paper, drawing their feelings.
Yeah, like art's another way of communication. It bypasses the usual verbal range of expressions and the vocabulary that we have engaged, you know, that we use normally, and engages in all the senses.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, the verbal range in your brain, it's also your body and your imagination, you know, and your creativity as well, yeah.
Cool. No, it's an interesting way of looking at it, but it, I guess coming at it, is there an evidence base for this? Is there proof that it actually helps people?
That evidence is starting to come into the media now. With HIV, for instance, they did a study in 2000 where they, with people that were HIV, and the study suggested that art therapy can lead to increased awareness of self as well as improved ability to cope with symptoms and stress and traumatic experiences.
Okay.
So what Tim and I are doing at the moment, we've actually, over the last 3 years now, been able to work with the people at the centre, they're coming to the centre. At the moment, we're doing 6 weeks art therapy course.
Okay.
With the men that are coming to the drop-in centre. And it's people don't understand really what it's all about. They think, oh, you know, just I can't draw, you know, I can only draw stick figures. But it's not about that. It's about the process. It's about the process of the art, taking people through, experiencing all types of mediums like clay, painting. They start off really shy at first, but then they really get into it.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're in the studio with Deirdre and Tim from the PLC, the art therapy program. We'll hear more about the process. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Well, well, well.
Positive Women is a support and advocacy organisation working with women living with HIV. Positive Women recognises the individual needs of these women and provide them with a safe and comfortable environment that is completely confidential. To find out more information, go to positivewomen.org.au.
A community service announcement supported by Joy.
Well, now you're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. How rude to be cut off by a computer. We are chatting with Tim and Deirdre about art therapy at the PLC. Tim, we were about to talk about what art therapy does. What does it provide for an individual and what's the process involved?
Art therapy can be a million things to a million people. Basically, what we do, we provide a safe space for healthy expression and exploration. So using artwork, we can, you know, explore things like putting out a map of your immediate world or your social networks or your family structures, your positive or your negative influences and your behaviours. So things that are going on in your life. And so what we're providing at the PLC is that space to do that with some people that care.
Cool. Very cool.
And Deirdre, do you have anything to add to that, any of your own perspective?
The last two art therapy sessions, last year and the year before, we actually got some really good comments from the clients, like what they said. We asked them, I said, well, what did you get out of art therapy? And it was a change that changes and increases your own awareness, relaxation and letting go of the outside world. On a personal level, inspired to explore more, which it does. And they definitely get involved, immersed in the processes.
Yeah, and I think one of the best things to do with art therapy is that you're able to, or the clients are able to experiment with materials, but to gain new insights into old structures or old problems. Exploring different responses to difficult feelings.
Cool.
Now, Deirdre, when you sent me the information about art therapy, there was this line, this expression, the hero's journey.
Yes.
Now, can you share with us and the listener, perhaps, what is the hero's journey?
Okay, well, Tim and I decided that we would bring the hero's journey. We've both studied Joseph Campbell, who was a mythologist.
Ah, yes.
And he actually studied every culture, Indian, all sorts of cultures.
Everything.
And he found that there was a pattern emerging from each culture. So what it is, I'll explain it really briefly. You're going along in your ordinary world, and then there's a call to adventure. So what happens then? It happens to people that and every one of us have had a tragedy or whatever. You fall into the abyss.
Mm.
Then while you're down in the abyss, things change. You have a sort of a transformation. So then you cross that threshold, and then coming back, returning to the ordinary world again, there must be a change. There's a change. So it's actually going along ordinary life, and then something happens in your life that turns you upside down, that makes a difference, your life totally different. It throws you into chaos. All sorts of things can, change. But then after you return, things are different. You think, well, what did I get from that? I'm not the same person that I was.
Yeah.
You know, it could happen if someone has an addiction, that they go into the abyss and then they return. It can happen if somebody dies in your family, you go into the abyss and you return.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because...
But things, when you return, things are different, things change.
No, it's from the Odyssey to Harry Potter.
It goes deeper than that, but you've got anything to add?
So as we look at art therapy, and we see it practiced at the PLC, but is it practiced in other places like aged care facilities or prisons?
Yeah.
Like that?
Everywhere.
I'm very passionate about that.
Yep. Prisons, aged care facility, we're with a client with dementia. Recently arrived in Australian clients, refugees, mental health, palliative care, school children, you name it.
So it's frequently used with people who are undergoing sort of struggle, like you mentioned.
Getting back to aged care, if I was building a facility, an aged care facility, the first thing I would do would be to put an art room in there. I mean, there's life after bingo. That's, I wouldn't have them lying around all day.
Yeah.
I would have them doing art. And there has been studies done by a doctor, Dr. Cohen, that his dad he died, unfortunately, before he got this program up. But this is what aged care facilities need. They need an art room and people like Tim and I to facilitate art therapy.
Yeah, cool.
Now, Deirdre, how can people living with HIV get involved, generally with the services at the PLC? How can they be referred into art therapy? Is it something they self-refer to?
Yes, we advertise art therapy. We're very passionate about it, Tim and I, so we're always spruiking off about art therapy to everybody. But unfortunately, people have the misconception that art therapy is about making sculptures and, being a good artist, but it's not about that. It's about the processes, and what they can do is they can ring the PLC and ask to speak to myself, and then I can refer them to Tim as well.
Sensational. Deirdre and Tim, it's been fantastic having you in this evening. I feel we need to get you back again at another time when we can spend much more time exploring both the hero's journey and going into that and how that transforms into art. But just to generally come in and speak again about art therapy, I think it's an interesting topic. So thank you both for coming in tonight.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks so much for your time, guys.
Joy 94.9.
This is Whoa, Whoa, Whoa on Joy 94.9. And you won't believe it, John. It's almost time to say goodbye.
Oh, no.
Where does the hour go every week?
God forbid.
We need to say enormous thanks to all of our guests for coming in this evening. For the interview we did with Rory O'Neill, also known as Panty Bliss. Now, remember that next Monday night is the VAC fundraiser. Whose eyeliner is it any gay? And we do have to thank David Christie and Susanna who came in to talk about that. To get tickets, search engine, MoshTix, M-O-S-H-T-I-X, for tickets. But as you heard, they're selling out quickly. And finally, thank you to Deirdre and Tim who came in to chat about art therapy. Remember, Queen of Ireland, the film, opens this Thursday, the 8th of September at cinemas across Melbourne, but especially at Nova in Carlton, very good friends of Joy and of the VIC. Search engine Panty Bliss for the trailer of the movie.
And we also want to invite you to a very special event that's happening later this month. On the 23rd of September is the Melbourne launch of Grunt, which is a very excellent resource for trans men who have sex with cis guys. Gives them all sorts of information about safe sex, safer sex, having fun sex, and just how to talk about it, how to be respectful about it, how to be a decent person and have fun. So that launch, again, is the 23rd of September. It is at the Equinox Gender Diverse Health Service, also known as Pronto, at 175 Rowe Street, Fitzroy, beginning at 6:30 p.m. There's more information available on the VAC website, but we strongly encourage you to come. It'll be a great night for a great resource with an after party at the Laird.
And what was it called again?
Grunt.
Grunt. Now, and who are the community of Grunt?
So Grunt was in, well, partly developed by VAC, but mostly by a network called PASH-TM, or the Peer Advocacy Network for the Sexual Health of Trans Masculinities. A number of trans guys throughout the country doing what they do best and talking about sex and just being pretty much amazing people. Did it from the ground up with some support from VAC, but mainly them. If you go to www.grunt.org.au, there are some incredible health resources, information, and a downloadable PDF booklet, as well as printed postcards.
And it will talk about that opening as well. Absolutely, on the website, which is fantastic. Well, John, it's been a great show. We need to thank Adam, who's been paneling for us tonight. Thanks, Adam. We need to thank David, who does our podcast. Thanks, David. You've been listening, of course, to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. Coming up next is Sonia and Crew with Broad, always a great show. On next week's show, Jack will be joined by Alex, and Alex is one of the new co-hosts from our Well 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 stable. Thank you for joining us, listener. Keep tuned to the gayest station in the nation, Joy 94.9. We're going to go out with a bit of The Seekers from the Golden Jubilee album 2012, originally recorded, you won't believe, in 1964, John, before you were born.
Oh, shock.
Morning Town Ride by The Seekers. Cheers, everyone, and good night.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.